left corner to Aginla. Aginla to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aginla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Okay, let's get things going on this Tuesday. It is Flames Talk on a Tuesday, November 5th. We are underway from our Groundworks downtown studio. Steinberg along with you, Aaron Vickers a little bit later on, and lots to get to this hour. We've got your Daily Flames Roundtable to hit on and a whole lot more. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. But it's a Tuesday, and that means we're kicking things off by saying hello to our NHL insider, Frank Saravalli, brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit SouthTrailChrysler.com. Frank joins us now, as he does every Tuesday here on Flames Talk from Daily Faceoff, DailyFaceoff.com, and more. Hello, Frankie. How are we doing?
Pretty good. How are you, Pat?
I'm doing very well. Lots to get into with you around the NHL. Try to always get a few Flames thoughts from you to kick things off. And I try to listen to your hits on other stations as much as I possibly can as well. I just can't get enough of you, Frank. I thought you'd like that. I heard you on Vancouver radio last week, and you were asked a question about Rasmus Anderson. I marked that down and said, hey, I should ask Frank about that on Tuesday. There's been plenty of, even in this market, buzz about, hey, is Rasmus Anderson a trade candidate? Is he a guy that is going to be here for the long term? So on and so forth. What's your feel on the organization's desire in terms of Rasmus Anderson's future in Calgary?
Not a trade candidate, and not right now, certainly. And I think if the Flames had it their way, certainly wouldn't be moving forward. I think there's a recognition on a number of different fronts. One, they still need pieces. They need players to carry the ball for this team. And if you were to take away Rasmus Anderson, you're pretty much left with 31-year-old Mackenzie Weegar and what? And that's not a knock on the other guys that are in the Flames lineup on the blue line. It's just that it really does start to get thin in a hurry. So that's one part of it. Two, they also know that if he's ultimately going to end up staying, that there's going to need to be a significant payment made. So that certainly raises some questions. And then three, the other facet to consider here is he might play so well, and he's played so well to this point. The production is really on a level that we're not accustomed to seeing from him. Mm-hmm. And this is a guy that has a 50-point season under his belt, but he's already matched the number of goals that he scored in that 50-point season, if you think about it, which is kind of crazy. And playing 24 minutes a night, he's doing everything. The other recognition here, and this is the part that is typically not being said out loud, the Flames might have to, even with all those things considered, they might have to trade him because his value just ends up being so exceptional that it's a tough decision that they might have to swallow and make.
Well, and then there's always the whole idea of, what does player want, and is player interested in re-signing, which is the biggest unknown. You know, I've kind of been of the opinion, and we've had plenty of conversations in this market about it, because it does tend to come up a lot, whether it's on our text line or phone lines or whatever. And you know, my opinion has been that if there is a desire on his side to re-sign and return and stay here long-term, that absolutely the Flames should try to make that happen. But you know, you talk about the season that he's having. You talk about his age. I mean, here's a guy that could very well, and in fact, most likely will be on Sweden's blue line for the upcoming Four Nations face-off. Mm-hmm. Like, what does a contract extension all of a sudden look like for this guy as he'll be kind of in his late 20s when it's time to make that decision?
Yeah, I mean, that's the hard part is it wouldn't be kicking in for two seasons. We're talking about 26, 27, yep. He'll be 30 years old. And then the next question is, what kind of term are we looking at? It really depends on where this season comes in points. And the other interesting part about the conversation is between player and team, they can't begin, they can't sign a contract extension until July 1. So they could have, I guess, cursory initial conversations. Like any part of that is acceptable because he is their property and teams could get a sense of what the player is thinking to be able to process and make decisions. But you're still, even at this March deadline, a ways away from even being able to get that done to provide any certainty that he would be here to stay longer. It's not that his value would diminish a whole heck of a lot if he has a monster season between March and July and the draft, but it's still a conversation you'd want to have to be able to properly assess things.
Anderson, on that Swedish blue line, if you're making that team?
It is for me.
I bring it up because he was absolutely on your daily faceoff projections earlier this week as well. So what?
And we had those made, by the way, by Uffe Boden, who's in Sweden and that would have a real good sense of what they might be thinking and feeling there. So the seven guys we had on that blue line, it's a pretty stout blue line. Victor Hedman, Rasmus Dahlin, Mattias Ekholm, Hampus Lindholm, Erik Karlsson, Gustav Forsling, and Rasmus Andersson.
Yep. Pretty good company to be in if you're Anderson. And Mackenzie Weegar, I know that Matt Larkin had him on his team. For you, is Weegar one of the seven for Team Canada?
I think he's got a decent shot. I certainly don't think it's a lock. I think there's other names in the mix. Like, I think you'd have to give some significant consideration to Josh Morrissey on Winnipeg's blue line. I really don't know how to size up Weegar this year because correct me if I'm wrong, I think he was better last year than he has been this year. Is that fair to say?
It's been tough because they've yet to find a partner to play with him all year. Definitely the power play has not been as strong, and that's not just a him thing, but, you know, when they moved him to be the quarterback of the power play last year and they got Kuzmenko going, that power play for the final quarter of the season was actually pretty dangerous. That has not been the case this year, and they haven't been able to find a partner. You know, him and Miramanov really worked well last year, but that has not been anywhere near as good a fit this year. And really there's no other natural fit they've been able to find for him as of yet. So it's been a little bit more tough to actually evaluate. I still think he's been one of their top two defensemen without question though.
Okay. But given what I just said earlier, like it'd be surprising if he wasn't.
Yes, for sure. And definitely Rasmus has been the guy that has popped off the page a whole lot more. Weegar's still doing the things that he does, blocking shots, a lot of shots towards the net. I wouldn't say that he's at least in my eyes, I wouldn't say that he has taken a step back from the level that he was at last year. It's just been a little bit harder to find a partner to play with him would be my read on it.
Well, and that certainly impacts things too, but here's the thing, and you mentioned a key point that I think is really important for any team that you're talking about in Four Nations. If he's not going to be playing on the power play.
Yep.
Like we know who is. It's not going to be Mackenzie Weegar for Team Canada. So with that, he needs to bring something else to the table, and the shot blocking would certainly be important. But if that's the case, are you taking Mackenzie Weegar, or are you taking Dougie Hamilton? Are you taking Mackenzie Weegar or Brandon Montour?
Yeah.
Mackenzie Weegar or Travis Sanheim? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's just a bunch of different questions that he's on Matt Larkin's Team Canada. I'm not entirely sold that Weegar would be on mine, but he's 100% in the mix.
Yeah, which is a really cool story. And I also think him going to World Championships a couple years ago and being a big part of that gold medal for Team Canada puts him in pretty good puts him very much on Hockey Canada's radar, because they really do they really do value that when they're making their teams. Last one I'll ask you about, and then we'll move on to some of the other around the league issues. But does Michael Backlund have a shot to be on that Swedish roster, or is that forward group just a little bit too stacked when it comes to a 35-year-old two-way guy?
He can be on my roster. I think he's viewed universally as sort of being on the bubble. But I think for all the other things that he provides, and particularly from a leadership perspective, I'd have a really hard time leaving him off.
Yeah. He's Frank Saravalli, our Daily Faceoff NHL insider. He joins us Tuesdays here on Flames Talk. Oilers have now played three games without Connor McDavid, won the first two, then lost on Prime Monday against New Jersey 3-0 in Edmonton. Just your impressions of three games of the Oilers minus number 97.
I think it's been a step forward. And yes, I say that knowing that they were shut out last night against the New Jersey Devils. I think if you actually were to kind of view that game and the chances that they created, there certainly wouldn't be any concern. Second night of back-to-backs, and these are no excuses, but Cal Pickard in net, Devils score three times on 16 shots. Like, I don't think there's a such thing in the NHL as a scheduled loss, but after the way that they started out the first two games without McDavid, sort of shot out of a cannon, that I think there was probably a natural letdown coming next, and that second night of the back-to-back probably contributes to that. That said, I think they are probably in a pretty fine spot moving forward. They've found some positive momentum. Leon Draisaitl very quietly has 9 goals in 13 games and is not far off of the league-leading pace. And Connor McDavid has the potential to come back this weekend. I mean, we're talking about a handful of games missed. So he's doing everything possible to get back. And Zach Hyman started to score, and Ryan Nugent Hopkins has played a little bit better. Like, it's just kind of, it's slow, but it's coming together for Edmonton in the way that a lot of people expected it would.
What's your confidence level that it comes together for Elias Pettersson in Vancouver? Like, it's still, what, 4 points to start the year? And Canucks have gotten their game on track, but it's been a big struggle for him, and obviously a huge talking point in that market. What's your confidence level that Elias Pettersson figures it out?
I'm fascinated that you use the term confidence level to ask the question.
Because of how much confidence, because of how much confidence he's lacking right now.
Yes, I mean it's a few things. It's confidence. It's compete. It is. I want to say engagement, if that makes any sense. Like, I think he's been really disengaged through the first part of this season. The numbers are just mind blowing. Like, we're talking like 30 some games without an even strength goal. That tally was running. And we're talking about a guy that really for a huge chunk of time and even last season before he signed the contract, he was on pace for 100 points. I don't know that there are words to explain how someone's game falls off a cliff like that. And I refuse to believe last season that his knee tendonitis is a way to explain all of this. That doesn't suffice for a player who is on a 2-on-1 and shovels a weak backhander to the net. A player who repeatedly gives away pucks without really any reason to. It's almost like he looks timid. He looks tentative. And I just don't know where that came from or how that crept into his game. I think tonight, I believe I read tonight is their sixth different line mate that they're going to have playing with Pettersson just on that one side. It's been a challenge for the Canucks, and am I confident that at some point he will get out of it? Yes, but I don't even know that he's found a shovel yet to dig his way out.
Right. Yeah. It's been a very from afar, it's been very strange watching that whole situation play out in Vancouver. Hey, Flames are in Montreal Tuesday night, and I know that, you know, for a lot of people, this Habs team was a group that a lot of people wondered if, you know, maybe they could make some noise in the Eastern Conference and be kind of a dark horse playoff team. Just four wins through their first month of the season. How disappointing is that start for the Habs?
It's been really disappointing for everyone. It's been disappointing for the fan base, who was craving a step forward and has really been, for such a passionate hockey market, had really kind of sat on their hands the last couple years and have played along with this rebuild, that this is a year when, if you don't see traction, you know, that's when you could start to see things shift in terms of their attitude and patience. I think it's been really disappointing from a front office and coaching staff standpoint. They really believe that they'd be positioned to take a bigger step. And I think the spot that they're in is solely due to their inability to defend.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that issue and problem has been compounded by some injuries. I mean, they went through a period of time in which Caden Gooley missed a stretch and Mike Matheson had back spasms. And then that essentially caused Lane Hudson 10 games into his NHL career to play one game against the Kings this year, 30 minutes and 5 seconds. I think he's an incredible talent and I love his willingness to try things, but 10 games into your NHL career, being handed the whole thing is too much too soon. So that puts them in a really awkward position because they want to be better and know they need to be better, yet they have some future pieces on the way that they think make up the future of that blue line with Hudson and David Reinbacher, who's injured, and Logan Mailloux, who's been up and down this year and clearly needs more time in Laval, I should say, and pronounce that correctly.
Well done.
But do you trade for someone now, knowing that you really only need them for 1 or 2 years? And what kind of assets are you willing to part with in order to make that happen? Essentially, what you're looking for is like a crutch to help stand your team up by adding a top four defenseman. Do you do that when the timing just isn't right? Like, do you give up good assets for something that might be temporary?
Yeah.
That's the spot they've worked themselves into.
Two more for you. One on Colorado, as they finally are getting some reinforcements. Hey, we talked about that last week. They've got a return date in 10 days for Nichushkin. They're going to get Lehkonen back. Still no timeline on a couple others, but at least getting Lehkonen and Nichushkin back this month, that's going to put them in a significantly better spot just for their overall depth.
Yeah, I mean, now you don't need to have Oliver Shillington playing forward, which is always a nice development. It's crazy what that team has been through. It's really a tough spot for management and the coaching staff, because they entered knowing that they were walking a tightrope this year, depending on how long it would take to get Landeskog and Nichushkin back. So they had to park that salary cap space on the side and couldn't fill out their roster.
Mm-hmm.
Then all these guys got hurt, and it's like, oh my God, we had an already thin team. We knew going into it that we were thin, and now you take out 5 players from our lineup. I mean, how do you compete? They basically are a 3-man team, and a lot of the rest of their roster is filled out with AHL call-ups and guys that aren't ready for it. It's It's been a challenge. And at the same time, they also parked Cal Ritchie, who I think is an unbelievable prospect, and sent him back to the OHL. And obviously, once you do that, you can't recall him.
Yep.
So I think they've been just up the creek without a paddle and are trying to find a way to just put on a life preserver and get through these next couple weeks. But then you also add in the fact that their goaltending has been no good, and it's a really, really tough place to be.
And finally, when is it too late for Nashville to figure this out? The expectations were huge in that market coming in, and they currently sit second from last in the Western Conference as it stands right now. Like, at what point does Nashville enter into lost season territory for you?
We're still a few weeks away from that, but what I will say is my level of concern has ratcheted up in a big way. It's gone from like a 3 to a 6 on a scale out of 10. Mostly because you have a game like last night. How does that team, and I know the Kings have been pretty good this year, but how do we have 16 shots on net? That part I'm a little lost on is, why has so much of Nashville's play been from the perimeter? Why is it that Roman Josi leads your team in inner slot shots?
Huh.
Never really a good thing when Ryan O'Reilly comes out and publicly flogs himself, saying it was one of the worst games of his career. And for all the scoring additions that they've made, how is this team 32nd in the league in goals at 5-on-5?
Yeah.
Part of it is luck, for sure. Like, if you were to look at expected goals versus actual goals differential, I think the Preds are 29th or 30th, somewhere in that range. So they've mostly been pretty unlucky. But that said, because of how many shots they have from the perimeter, and because of that stat that I gave you about Roman Josi leading them in inner slot shots, their expected goals isn't insanely high. So they've got a lot of work to do to figure this out. And I think it has the potential to be a really cautionary tale for a team that 1 year ago at this exact time was very much thinking rebuild.
Yeah.
To get through and win 15 straight and make the playoffs, and all of a sudden take that plan, crumple it up, and throw it out the window. I think it's going to be a fair question if this goes sideways to ask, was this too much too soon?
Yep. Anything exciting coming up for Frank? You got any travel planned here in the next little bit, or is it pretty quiet for you here?
Well, it's never quiet. I'm going to park myself on the couch tonight and not watch hockey. There's kind of a big thing going on in this country today.
Football? You have football on Tuesday?
Yeah, all right, yeah.
What's going on today?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a Tuesday, yeah. No. So we're going to be watching that, the election, and then going to Toronto this upcoming weekend for Hall of Fame and GM meetings. So I'll look forward to hopefully running into Craig Conroy there, and then back, and we'll see what else I can cook up.
We appreciate the time, as always, my friend. Have a good weekend then, hey, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday. Thank you, pal.
Yep, sounds good. See you, Pat.
He is Frank Saravalli. He is our NHL insider from Daily Faceoff and dailyfaceoff.com. He joins us every week, brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit southtrailchrysler.com.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Time now for a Tuesday edition of your Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Just minutes from the airport, it's Steinberg, Aaron Vickers. Hi, Vicks.
Hey, buddy.
Vickers from NHL.com with us, joining this hour. And now Derek Wills, the voice of the Calgary Flames, joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable, gents. And Willsy, yesterday on Monday, Vickers and I, and then on our little roundtable with Danny and Wes too, spent a lot of time talking about Martin Pospisil, and specifically we're talking about, you know, the penalties and that penalty that was taken in Sunday's Battle of Alberta loss. But overall, there's just been a lot of discourse about the season Martin Pospisil is having so far. They tried him at center. That experiment's been put on pause. Now he's on the wing on the fourth line to start Tuesday night's game in Montreal. Is it too much of a simplification if I ask this question? Like, is it fair to ask if Martin Pospisil is dealing with that cliche sophomore slump?
Well, I think it's fair to ask, but I'm not sure that that's the excuse that I would use if I was Martin Pospisil. He just looks like a guy who is a little bit lost right now, and maybe that has something to do with the move from the wing, where he was one of the most impactful rookies in the NHL last season, to center, where he admitted to me when I asked him about it, he found himself thinking on the ice instead of just reacting on the ice. And, you know, the Flames are a team that is trying to play with pace, and it's tough to play with pace when you're thinking about where you should be and what you should be doing instead of just, you know, going out there and playing the game. So I do think that he's probably been overthinking a little bit in that regard, especially when he was playing up the middle. And the other thing that I believe that he's overthinking is, what can I do and what can't I do? Because there's been a lot of focus internally and externally on the penalties that he's been taking. And it's not so much the penalty minutes. He doesn't even lead the team in that category. It's the timing of the penalties and, you know, penalties that he just simply shouldn't be taking. So I think that he's out there trying to figure out where that fine line is between playing aggressive, and that's when he's at his best, when he's playing on the edge, and being over aggressive and taking penalties that hurt him and hurt the team. So it's something that I think he's just going to have to fight through. And I think demoting him to the fourth line, at least to start this game against the Canadiens tonight, is potentially a good way to get him going again, because we've seen it happen with a bunch of other guys. They're forced to simplify their game. They're forced to play a north-south style of hockey, and they're forced to play better to earn more minutes. So I'm anxious to see him on a line with Lomberg and Kirkland tonight.
To answer your question, Pat, and this might be an oversimplification of the simplification, he's slumping in his sophomore season, yes, but I wouldn't define it as the traditional sophomore slump, where a guy comes into his second year, the expectation is he's going to take a big jump, and instead he falls flat on his face. Like, if you look at it from a pure statistical standpoint, Martin Pospisil is on pace for 34 points this season. Last year, he only played 63 games, but if you average his point per game pace over 82-game schedule, that's 32 points. So he's right back in the wheelhouse of what he produced last year. His penalty minutes last year, extrapolated over an 82-game schedule, is 142. He's on pace for 116. So he's actually on pace to be penalized less this season. But the eye test and the statistics don't necessarily match up when we're talking about Martin Pospisil, because he's not having the same impact shift in, shift out. He's not the guy that has defensemen looking over their shoulders whenever they retrieve a puck. He's not the antagonist or the pest that he was over the 63 games he played last year. Simply put, he's not being nearly as effective as he was in his rookie season when he burst onto the scene, you know, almost 370 days ago and really kind of took the Calgary Flames by storm. And some would argue that he was the most exciting player on the Flames team last season. And I agree with Willsy to a degree where, well, actually, I shouldn't say to a degree, I agree fully, where it looks like because of the types of penalties he's taking and the timing of those penalties, he looks like he's thinking more than playing instinctually, and I think he was guilty of that in terms of his center responsibility, but now that he's back on the wing, I think he's being a little too in between the ears right now in terms of, do I finish this check? Do I try to do this? Do I try to do that? Because when you have your head coach call out and say, basically, this is the second game he's cost us with a bad penalty, it starts to add up, and you start to be thinking as opposed to playing instinctually, because you're being told, well, your instincts here have been wrong, and it's trickled down into his game. So is he having a sophomore slump in the traditional sense? No. But as a second-year player,
he's not being as effective as he was in the first season.
Having a tough time with this one, friends, because I fully recognize that, yeah, you know, sometimes a guy takes too many penalties or penalties at the wrong time. But I do worry about, you know, hearing the coaching staff talk about it and having people on the outside talk about it and have him thinking about it. I really do worry that that takes away the actual effectiveness of what we're talking about with this player. And we talked a little bit about this on the roundtable that we did on Monday, our four-person roundtable, Wilsey. And, you know, I think about Sam Bennett, and Sam Bennett took some really, really frustrating calls during his time as a member of the Flames. But you know what? Last year, en route to helping the Panthers win a Stanley Cup, he set a career high with 100 penalty minutes last year. And they're not all just the fighting. We're not talking about nothing but fighting majors, right? And I think about Brad Marchand. I think about other players that part of what makes them who they are is that they play on the edge. And because they play on the edge, there are going to be times they take overzealous penalties, which is exactly what Martin's was on Sunday against Edmonton. And I worry about if you start asking him to take less penalties and he's thinking about taking less penalties, now he's just not forechecking the same way. And you know, I've seen a few times this season where he's been far less aggressive than you would expect him to be on forechecks.
Yeah.
And so I almost wonder if the best course of action here, it's, you know, I don't mind moving him around the lineup or putting him on the fourth line for this game in Montreal or however long it lasts. But I almost wonder if, like, do you just live with it and let him figure it out while still remaining the player on the edge that he is? Because if he's thinking too much about not crossing the line, then he's not walking the line, and he's nowhere near as effective a player if he's not walking the line. There's a really interesting dilemma to me, Wilsey. I don't know the right way to go about it, because what you want to see is the guy that we saw for the better part of last season that we haven't seen as much of this year, and him walking the line and taking the occasional frustrating penalty last year was part of the Martin Pospisil experience. And I would say, based on what we've seen this year, you'd much rather have last year, even with the frustrating penalties that go along with it. It's a really interesting one to watch play out here.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from, but the one thing, or one of the things I've really admired about this coaching staff, especially this season, it seems, is that they've held their players accountable. So how do you hold your players accountable and then basically tell Martin Pospisil, it's okay, we're not too worried about the bad penalties that you're taking that we believe are costing us hockey games. So I think if you're going to hold your players accountable, you have to hold them accountable. But it's also an opportunity for Martin Pospisil, as just the second year player in this league, to figure out where that fine line is. And Pat, I like the Sam Bennett comparison, because Bennett took a lot of bad penalties earlier in his career, and he still takes some.
He's still taking really bad ones at really bad times in Florida, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So he's figured it out, and I think Pospisil will figure it out, but right now he's going through the process of doing that. And I do think that it has hurt him, because he's a player who played with a tremendous amount of pace last season, flying up and down the wing, getting in there and banging and crashing on the forecheck. And we really haven't seen that guy all that often this season. We've seen him from time to time, but certainly not as consistently as we did as a rookie. So the Flames need him. They need him to find his game. And we've seen a number of players demoted to the fourth line, with Ryan Lomberg on the left and either Kevin Rooney or Justin Kirkland at center, and find their game playing in the right side of that line. I think they're forced to simplify. They have to work to try to earn more minutes. And that's the position Martin Pospisil has been put in for tonight's game against the Canadiens. And I suspect he'll probably respond positively, as other guys have in that situation.
Yeah, I do think that a good landing place or a good teaching tool for Martin Pospisil is putting him on a line with Ryan Lomberg, the figure it out, if you will. And if I were Ryan Huska, I'd just point to Lomberg and tell Pospisil, hey, whatever he does, you do. And if there happen to be some rough penalties along the way, as long as they're not holding, hooking, penalties where you're not moving your feet and you're just water skiing alongside an opponent, those don't count. But if you get a boarding or a roughing, you can live with those types of penalties for the game you want Pospisil to play. It's pointing to Ryan Lomberg and say, hey, do what this guy does, because he's figured it out.
Although I don't I don't look at that penalty on Sunday as a lazy penalty, right? Like that
it's
was
unfortunate, but it's not lazy.
That's a battle penalty where maybe lost control of his stick. I don't know. I want to see him be that guy again, and I think the only way that he does it is by playing on the edge. But Wilsey, you make a great point about the accountability, and that's why I really think it's a really fascinating dilemma for the Flames going forward with this player. Okay, Derek, Vickers, Steinberg, Tuesday edition of the Flames Roundtable. I don't like calling you Aaron. It just feels weird.
What I feel like Wilsey would have been better than Derek, but I'll defer to him.
No, Derek's fine. Derek is good. Wilsey's good. Like
nobody in the history of time calls me Aaron.
Yeah, I just don't. It feels weird calling you Aaron. Anyway,
ew.
Gents, what looks like pairing number three tonight will be once again Tyson Barrie, who I thought had a great game against Edmonton, by the way. Barrie and Braden Pahal will be your third pairing Tuesday in Montreal. So what does Jake Bean have to do to get back into this lineup?
Well, it's a numbers game right now. I don't think Jake Bean has played poorly. As a matter of fact, I've asked the coaches about him, and he said, yeah, he's made some mistakes. There haven't been a lot of them, but there have been a handful of them. And, you know, we'd obviously like every player to eliminate every mistake, and they understand that's not going to happen. Hockey is a game full of mistakes. But because you have eight NHL defensemen in your roster, you, I think, feel like you need to play them all. And we had to wait a while to see Joel Hanley, and we had to wait a while to see Tyson Barrie. He's only played in five of the first 12 games for the Flames. And, you know, I talked to him this morning. We'll hear that conversation during our pregame show. And, you know, we talked about trying to turn himself into an NHL regular again. And I think Jake Bean is going through the same process right now. He's a puck-moving defenseman. I think he's done a good job of that. He's an offensive defenseman. He's got 3 points in his first seven games with his hometown team. Yeah, there have been a few mistakes, but you know, he's getting to learn a new team and a new way of playing, and he's got a new defense partner. So I think you have to expect that to some extent. So there are a few things that he has to clean up. And I guess to answer your question, what does he have to do to get back in? It's the same things that Tyson Barrie and Joel Hanley and on a couple of occasions, Daniil Mirimanov had to do to get back in the lineup. And that's continue to work hard at practice, show the coaches that you're ready, stay ready. And when you get an opportunity, try to make sure that they have no choice but to leave you in the next time you get a chance to play.
Yeah, basically, from my perspective, Jake Bean kind of just has to wait his turn for a lot of the reasons Wilsey just sort of pointed out. But for me, when he is back in, he needs to be a bit tougher to play against. He hasn't registered a hit yet this season in 111 minutes of ice time. He's averaging 15.55 a night in the seven games he has played and hasn't registered a hit. And he's also not being peppered with defensive zone starts. He's been used very sparingly in the defensive zone. Only 5.3% of his shifts have started in the defensive zone. That's last amongst the eight defensemen on the team. So he's getting favorable opportunities, and he'll need to continue to capitalize on those offensive zone starts where, as Wilsey pointed out, he's been fairly effective offensively with 3 points in the seven games that he's played. But for me, from center ice back, he needs to play with a little bit more grit, and not that that's his game and that's not the expectation of you need to be a stay-at-home shutdown D like Pahal or like Kevin Ball. But when it's center ice back, you need to be make life more difficult on your opponent any way you can.
Yeah, I mean, I think the answer to the question, yeah, is just wait. Wait until they feel like they need to make a decision and make a change. And you know, whether that's Tyson Barrie coming out. And honestly, again, I thought he played really well against Edmonton. And I'm glad that actually they're not making that change. And just because they lost, they don't make the change. I think that's a good thing to see, because I thought actually that pairing was really strong with Barrie and Pahal on Sunday night. But I feel bad for Jake Bean, because at no point have I felt like he has been, you know, poor and like you're like, oh, that guy's got to come out of the lineup. I do grant you that there are times when he is maybe a little easily pressured into making a not so great decision in his own zone. And yeah, he, at this stage in his career, I don't think we're ever expecting Jake Bean to be an overly physical defender. And I know that's something that this coaching staff values, is defenders who play with a little bit more edge and a little bit more bite. But, you know, it's been, you know, Jake Bean signed here on a 2-year contract. And I don't know if he was expecting to be a healthy scratch on this regular a basis. And I don't know if he's played poor enough that you're like, oh, well, he can't be in the lineup. But I think the thing that changed dramatically, or I think there's two things. First of all, the play of Kevin Ball and the fit that he had, or has had rather, with Rasmus Anderson has made it a little bit more difficult. And Braden Pahal kind of just staking his claim. It's like, you can't take me out of this lineup, which I give him a lot of credit for. I think Pahal's maybe had one rough night all year, and that was in Vegas. Otherwise, he's been very, very steady for what you're asking him to do as your third-pairing right-side D-man. And I think a lot of us probably had Bean and Anderson written in as a D-pairing to start the year, but Kevin Ball and Rasmus Anderson have made a really, really good pairing together, so maybe it just hasn't been able to go that way. So I think a few things have changed it. So to me, yeah, you just wait until there's a change, and this has been less about Bean's play and maybe more about a couple of guys playing better than expected in the roles that they've been put in.
Absolutely, and you've got some internal competition at that position. So you've got a top three that, if they're healthy, they will play. I mean, that top pairing of Kevin Ball and Rasmus Anderson has been fantastic. And obviously you have Mackenzie Weegar on your second pairing. But even Daniil Miromanov, who has spent most of the season playing in the top four, hey, he's been a healthy scratch in a couple of games as well. I think that goes back to the internal competition. Has he been horrible? No. But he gave the coaches an opportunity to take him out because he wasn't as good as he can be or as they want him to be in a couple of games. And then you've had all kinds of guys vying for minutes on that third pairing. And I think the Flames played a pretty good game on Sunday night against the Oilers. So I don't think that they wanted to or needed to make a change to that third pairing going into this game against the Canadiens tonight. And, you know, Tyson Barrie helped them score their first power play goal in seven games. So I think he deserves an opportunity to stay in. And to your point, Braden Pahal, I think, had one bad game this season, but playing the role that he plays, he's played it very consistently. So it's hard to take him out. So, yeah, it's a numbers game for Jake Bean right now. He will get another shot, probably on this road trip, and we'll see if he can get in and stay in.
Wilsey, you brought up a very good point there in what Tyson Barrie can bring on the power play. And if you're grading out Jake Bean and Tyson Barrie, and they're very close together in terms of what you've seen out of them this year, the edge is going to go to Barrie simply because he can help that second power play unit. And we did see
last game.
I mean, Calgary's power play is sitting at 16.2%, 22nd overall in the league. And if you're trying to decide between two guys that are razor thin, razor close, the guy that you're going to be able to use on the power play to try to prop that up, to try to jumpstart it, is probably going to get the slight nod.
Yep. Okay, gentlemen, we will do this again on Wednesday. For now, have a great rest of your Tuesday. Thank you, Wilsey.
Okay, guys, have a good night.
He's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll start to wrap us up this hour. Thanks to Shan and Connor, our producers this hour. And the Daily Flames Roundtable is brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Just minutes from the airport, the simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills.